Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
This intensive, this workshop that we're going to take part in is entitled, at least for now, Living Now. And the subtitle is the way and the will and the work of letting go. And I'm just going to take a few minutes to talk about this idea of the way and the will and the work of letting go, because it's important for us to understand, especially if we're new in any way at all, to the principles that have to do with one's real transformation. I think I'm going to interrupt myself right there and throw something in here at the top of the talk. Transformation is a kind of a new age word. And I think that the truth of the word has come to be misunderstood because it's gentler than the real meaning, which is to die to oneself. There is a transformation that we go through when we get new clothes, a new job, a new relationship, where we've defined for ourselves who we will be by what we've envisioned. But the real work is not about things seen, but about a relationship with things unseen. And that when we've imagined for ourselves what we're to become, whether we know it, we've imagined ourselves into a box. Because the only thing we can imagine for ourselves is from the content of our own past, reconfigured to be something comforting and consoling to us. And this work that we're going to talk about and be together with over the next 5 days is not about finding a new image for yourself. It's about freeing yourself from the nature inside of you that relies on an image to define you. Because if you examine the moments that are most stressful and painful in your life, what you'll see is when you're trying to be something that you think you're supposed to be, or when you're disappointed with people because they didn't live up to your picture of them. And what's the haunt of any past other than revisiting something that calls on you? Well, where is it written that your life belongs to something that rises up and calls on you to wreck you by dragging you back through things? So we're going to do something very different. We use the word transformation from time to time, but I want to get it right out on the floor that we're talking about going through something that every one of us is intended to go through as human beings to fulfill the purpose of our very being on this planet. And that's why when I say the words, the way, the will, and the work of letting go, of living in the now, we're talking about something that is at once a whole movement. Not the way in which we tend to think of things, and I'll outline this quickly. Our minds, the way they are, are not just creatures of conditioning, but they're actually structured to divide us up from what we think about. Because the way we know something is that our mind will put the thought of it on the screen of itself, and then we examine the thought about the thing. And the thought about something is not what it is. The thought about that beautiful clap of thunder and that rainstorm that we had a moment ago isn't that thing. That's a dynamic thing, and the thought about it isn't. But when we talk about it, I refer to a thunderstorm, your mind captures the picture of it, and we're communicating. Well, when we speak of what it means to become a different order of human being, we're talking about recognizing that as we are, our present nature it takes an idea, an image, a thought, and relates to it as being life itself. And it's not. Life itself is not confined. Life itself is not ever limited to any idea that we have about it in the moment. Because life itself, the now, is an actual, and I'll use the word, being, a dynamic presence A life itself that goes on and is the source of our own life, I might add, but that we're apart from because we think of being in the now. Have you ever met anybody who talks about being in the now and while they're talking about it, you can see they're absolutely sound asleep. They're standing on their own toe or something like that. So when I use the words, the way, the will, and the work, I'm talking about not specific, you know, cause and event things. I'm talking about something that's continually being created. But we have to talk about it in these segments because that's how our mind grasps things. So we're always dealing with a certain problem when we're communicating. And the problem is I can only communicate one idea at a time, although you're going to think at points that I'm trying to put 50 ideas out at once. And sometimes I do that. So if I get into one of those sentences that runs for 4 minutes straight, just take a deep breath and don't worry about it. It's the spirit of life. It's the spirit of love. It's the spirit of goodness that counts, not the words about it. And if we all do our work, we'll be immersed in that. Hence the idea of the way, the will, and the work of letting go. Now, the way is for us connected in the beginning with first a kind of recognition that what we know ain't enough. That there's something going on independent of what we think we know. How many of you have begun to realize that what you know is often what slams you in the head 2 minutes later, that it's not what I know that counts, but there must be something else. And our problem, because of the way the mind works, is that when we think we don't know something, the answer the mind gives us is, well, go know something else. Go get another book. Acquire more knowledge. Now, knowledge in itself is a dead end. I don't care who's talking to you. You can read the Beatitudes or whatever scripture it is that is the most meaningful in the world. You can acquire the knowledge and all you wind up being is a psychological spiritual parrot. Knowledge is not enough in itself. Knowledge must become, now listen, connected within you to the life and the truth that knowledge came from. Because until you and I become the living book of truth, the living book of life, all the rest of it is meaningless because, as you should well know by now, when we've got the book of who we are, the book of how we should be, the book of our God, the book of whatever it is, whoever we meet, we look at them, we look at the book, we look at them, we look at the book, and we meet life through reading and comparing ourselves to the moment and what we think we're supposed to do and be like that. And how many of you know that's what stress is? It'll drive you nuts trying to be... Trying to be someone will drive you crazy. How many of you don't have far to go on your drive? We don't. We're actually there. Now it's the journey back home. So when I talk about the way, I'm speaking of this beautiful moment, which by the grace of God and by the inherent need of a person, they stumble upon the true esoteric truths. Now you've all, if you have any religious background, you've seen some of these things. You've heard some things in your past. You've read tremendous things that even though you don't understand them, they move you. They touch you. Because that's what a great truth does. A great truth does not belong to the time in which it is read. It could be said really that a great truth is what gives rise to time itself. And then the individuals who find in that time these things that start to connect them to a broader life. So that's the first idea, is that this way has to do with finding truthful principles, beautiful principles. And in recognizing them and beginning to embrace them and wanting to understand them, because that's a significant aspect of it, is that as we find these principles and begin to bring them into our heart with a wish to understand them, then we are, if you will, seated. That's a kind of seeding, if you know the story of the parable of the sower in the New Testament. This idea of a sower went out with his seed, and the seed represents not only the principles that have been alive since the beginning of time that make possible the growth inside of a human being of that which that seed is connected to, which is this, if you want to use this idea, this tree of life that it grows into, that seed is both these principles. The seed is both the individual in whom those principles are sown, and then the seed is also the person himself who then must die to himself, herself, so that something that was seeded in the beginning of all that can flower and become that life that is no longer what is comparing itself to everything around itself, but actually is living in an incomparable life, one in which one isn't always measuring oneself and trying to figure out who you are by how people look at you and what you've won from the world. So this idea of the way, and that's what I call this, the way, the beginning of that, leads to what we're going to call the will, the way and the will. And the will aspect in this work has to do with what happens as a person, because of this new knowledge that we're going to be discussing, they begin to see the difference, and this is really a pretty important idea, the difference between a need and a desire. We don't really know the difference. The desire is what we're not only born with, but formed from. You're not special because you desire. And even your desires themselves aren't unique. To be a human being is to be born, as we said, in a seed form that longs for that which nourishes and completes it. But because of the fact that we're born in the world that hands us everything that's supposed to do that, we're just like, I call them bees lined up at a flower, waiting to get in there and dip our little proboscis. How many of you know, don't think you have a proboscis? Dip our nose, you know, into that thing that's going to make me whole. I desire a man. I desire a woman. I desire more money. I desire a better position. I desire more approval. I desire more of this, less of that. All the time, desire, desire, desire. And the point of all of our life, if we're even a little bit present to it, at a certain point, we look and say, you know, I've been desiring stuff since the time began, and all I wind up doing is desiring new things. I'm never free of the desire itself. I'm a want machine. How many of you know what it means to be a want machine? Because, you see, what else do I do? When I come to the end of what a want can give me, and I recognize in that moment, I'm looking at this void, here's this emptiness, what else do I do with the fact that I've reached the end of what I want? Well, here's what I do. I'm instantaneously downloaded from my own psychology the next want, because clearly that want wasn't it. But you never ask yourself, if that want wasn't it, how come I didn't know it when it popped up the first time? You understand what I'm saying? If I come to the end of the road and it says dead end, why do I keep going down the same road? I mean, a sign keeps saying, go here. I go, thank you, and I keep going there, going nowhere. And that's when, because of the principles and the ideas, that a person starts to understand, you know what? It isn't something new that I should desire, but I have a new need. And the new need is, I'd like to understand, for one thing, something about this nature that's a desire machine. Because how long am I going to be stupid? And by stupid, I'm not being condescending. When I say stupid, I mean, how long am I going to live in the dark of myself? Because that's what ignorance is in the end, is living in the dark of myself. Living in the dark of myself means simply that I am acted on, moved by, and sustained through a host of thoughts and feelings, 99% of which I'm never conscious of until after I've done what I've been bidden to do, and then wind up thinking to myself, you stupid idiot, and then believing that because I can call myself stupid, I'm smart. And I'll give you a minute to think about that. How many of you ever think to yourself, you idiot? Why wasn't the smart you there at the top? You know, because, and that's part of the game. We think, I've learned. And that's another one of the new needs, is I need to realize what real, I need to learn what it means to learn. Because I've been learning all along, and I'm still burning. I'm still churning. I'm still a human being captured all the time by stuff that I don't know how I got captured by. So there's another need. I need to come to the end. I want to understand what this nature is inside of me that does nothing but come up with the next desire, each of which is empty. I want to understand this part of myself that when it starts to direct me towards what it directs me, that rather than going for what it needs, the need to become more conscious in that moment of this, of what it is that's dark inside of me. Not dark as bad. I'm going to talk a lot about that. Not dark as bad. Dark as whose potential hasn't been understood. Dark as a source of energy. Dark as a source of understanding. Dark as something that is waiting for sunlight to transform it, to change it, to give it the inherent newness capable in that. So there's the idea of this way, and this will. This will, again, lastly, being this awakening to a new need in myself. I'm sitting at home and I'm lonely. I always let the desire drive me out to go get a drink or go socialize or call somebody. And I see that that desire, while it seems to fulfill me, can't. And then the need comes to become a different human being. And that leads to the work. Because we've talked about the way, the will, and the work. And the work of letting go, the work of living in the now, begins for us as this way, this knowledge that we've gained. You know, I've learned a little bit about myself now. I see that I've given myself over to ideas that I was conditioned by. I mean, I was told that I had to be a certain kind of person. And even though I always sort of inherently knew that living with resentment because I said yes to somebody wasn't right, because how can it be right to be filled with resentment? If I really want to do something, I wouldn't be like that. I start to say, you know, I don't want to be like that. Then comes little by little by little, this whole idea of a new will. I'm going to start as best I can to do what I, listen closely, to do what I know is true as best I understand it in the moment, instead of allowing what is presently in me to tell me what's true for me. Have you ever had something inside of you tell you this is what you have to do? And how many of you would live with someone who repeatedly told you what to do, and 82% of the time, after they finished telling you what to do, you wound up in a ditch? How many of you would stay with someone like that? Anybody? We've done it, haven't we? That's exactly what we've done. Like, I live with someone who's all the time telling me who I am, how to handle stuff, where to get it done. And when I'm done, it says, you idiot. And I go, okay, thanks. And what's your next instruction? And that's the work. Because the work is this idea of the birth in us of what I call a new authority. Right now, our authority is pain. Unseen, it's pain. You may call it fear if you want. And the reason that the authority is presently at us is fear or pain, negative state, is because A, it tells us you can't, you shouldn't, you won't, don't dare. Or it tells us, do this and you'll be free of this fear. Do this, you'll be free of your loneliness. Do this, you'll get over this negative state. And what is true and what is full of light does not threaten. It doesn't coerce. It doesn't push. It changes what it touches. And we have to learn the difference between letting something change us versus seeking control over these states that presently drive us, which is what we're about. How many of you know we want control? We're looking for control. Well, did you ever think about this? And I'm urging you to do it. Here's part of the new knowledge. Could it possibly be that anything I'm looking for control over already controls me? Or I wouldn't be looking for it. So here's a fantastic switch. Boom. Wow. My whole life I've been trying to figure out how to control this person. Because I feel like if I get enough strength, enough understanding, I'll have charge of this situation or that person. And then one day I realize, you know what? How can I have control over this if I'm being compelled to seek the control? Anyone who's compelled to do or be anything has no control, but the compulsion tells them to seek control. So the work starts with this process of flowering, of discovering through inside of yourself. First, these new ideas that let you look into yourself. Then the work, the will part where I begin to let a new need. I want to understand this, man. I don't want to be a victim anymore of anything. For one thing, let alone my own negative states. I don't want to live like that. And from that need begins this new relationship with what we're calling the work. And the work, lastly, last touch on it, is that I start to have something in me. How about this? I begin to doubt my own depression. I actually begin to doubt it. Have you ever noticed you never doubt a negative state? Come on. And by the way, you might as well get used to this. First of all, I know everything about you. That's the truth. So pretending like it doesn't apply to you really doesn't work. And you, if you could watch yourself, sometimes I'll say something and you'll assume the who do you think you're talking to posture. Now here's a great idea. Real intelligence can't be insulted. Can it? How can that which is true and right and connected to truth itself ever feel like it was insulted? Can I tell you who feels insulted? The part of you that has to go. And you ought to know that by now, because what the worst stuff that ever happens to you is when someone says something you don't like, and then they own you. Your reaction tells you that the reason you're feeling the way you are is because of the way that person is. And therefore, the answer is get rid of him. Get out of that room. Change the circumstance at all costs. Free yourself. And you're a slave to the negativity. So this is the way and the will and the work. A new authority based on beginning to understand, you know what? I've been an idiot because I thought there was all this stuff I had to gain, approval, power, possession. I had to get all this together and I got a lot of it. And now I'm spending my life trying not to lose it. And maybe the answer is all along that whatever is really of value, I can't lose. Because if I can lose it, man, I'm going to live in fear of loss. And if I can live in the fear of loss, then anyone who threatens it will own me. Because I'll spend my time protecting what I believe fulfills my purpose. And either a person knows in their heart or not that how can the purpose of this life be spent protecting something that fear produces? You get all that, if you will, at once into this mind that's somewhat resistant to these bigger pictures. And you start to go, yeah, you know what? There is a new authority. I may feel this fear. I may be shaking at the moment, but you know what? You have no authority over me. And I won't let you. I refuse it. That doubt comes into my mind, starts to try to drag me over the coals about what's going to happen next week. And instead of going, welcome doubt, come in my house and throw your garbage everywhere you want to, I recognize it for what it is. Something that doesn't belong in my heart. Something that has been granted access into my heart because I thought when it presented itself that it had something of value. And this is a deep thought, and then I'm going to move on. Anything that looks at a negative state and says, hi, pal, is in collusion with the negative state. Which means that that I, which we'll use that word, that I, that part of ourselves that looks at something that causes us pain, that drags us down into something in the past, says, look at this. It seems like it's a good old buddy when I first meet him, which means that the part of me that meets the negative state is one with it. Not me, because how many of you don't know this? Ever get invited to a psychological party and then you wind up finding the whole thing was at your expense? You know, so something says, let's think about this. Let's go back. And you go, oh, okay. And you wander back because it seems like a good thing to do. And the next thing you know, you're in depression. You're taking a drink. You're doing something against yourself, trying to figure out how to straighten out someone. You're angry. How did you get there? And here's what we say. It was his fault. It was something happened. I don't know how I got there. When we're done here, you will know how you got there. You will know not to trust what wants to take you there, and you will have a new partner in life that will never lead you down a path to something in which the promise of yourself is compromised. So that's an overview of what we're going to be doing. And now take a deep breath because we're going to get started. There was once a little creature and it was on the branch of a great mighty oak. Really, this mighty oak was the father of the forest. And this little creature was sitting there and it was going, and then from time to time it would cry a little bit and then go back sighing. And finally, the old oak just couldn't take it anymore. Little creature, what the heck is wrong with you? Little creature was surprised and said, well, I'm not sure. If you want to know, I just can't make it all come together in my mind. And the oak said, do I know you well enough to do my father of the forest voice? Why little oak tree? Why little creature? What are you talking about? I thought it would be different. What little creature did you think would be different? Being a butterfly. When I thought about being a butterfly, I thought to myself, you know what? No problems. But everything irritates me. Everything irritates me. And little creature went on, I'm afraid. A lot of the time, I figured when I was a butterfly, I just wouldn't have the fears that I used to have. And by God, I still have those fears. And that's not it. The past, it bothers me. I figured when I was a butterfly, the life that I had wouldn't be a problem for me anymore. And the mighty oak looked at the little creature and said, well, you know, I can understand some of these things. And so let me ask you a couple questions. I want to just kind of get to the bottom of this because I may be able to solve this mystery for you. And the little creature said, oh, thanks so much. So the tree said, do you find yourself getting tripped up quite often? The little creature thought for a minute and said, you know what? I do. I do get tripped up. Now, you must always come into the story. Maybe you're not a fan, so maybe you don't like stories. I use them a lot, so get over it. But you are always in the story, all characters, as by the way you are in life. And in this instance, we're taking on the part of the little creature in the oak. You're also the oak, but you don't know it yet. So the said, do you get tripped up? Little creature, yeah, you know, I do get tripped up. Now, how many of you get tripped up? See, this is we're after honesty here. We love honesty. God help us to be honest creatures. That's such an important thing I can't tell you. And by the way, aren't dishonest people, I'll just use the word, distasteful? You can tell. You meet somebody, they got their airs going. And you know, a lot of us can't help it, by the way. For instance, and we'll all have the chance to do this. Boy, you know, see, so much to talk about, so little time. Working together like this, there's a benefit that's unspoken in it. And one of the benefits is that you will get to see everyone here go through at least 15 characters over the next 5 days.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit GuyFinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
Because there are those of us who our false personality is, you know, quite jovial. And then there are those of us who our false personality is quite negative, you know, like this. And each person who is the expression of whatever this tendency is in their personality believes that that's essentially all there is that's possible for them, given the circumstances, because the same personality is dependent upon the condition it's in order to be what it is. Which means it's not really your personality at all, is it? It's just something that's turned on by a certain set of events. Change the events, up comes a different person in you. How many of you know that? How many of you have nothing on Seth? She was a multi-personality disorder person. All right. So we trip over ourselves, don't we? Tree goes on. Well, how many says to the little creature, do you feel as though you're hauling around quite a bit of weight behind you? And please don't take offense to the comment. And the little creature says, yeah, you know, I do feel like how many of you feel like there's a lot of, you're tugging stuff behind you? Yes? Yes, okay. Yeah, I do. That's pretty accurate. I feel like I got a lot of stuff that I'm pulling along behind me. Oak says, all right. And how about this? Do you spend a lot of time chewing things over? How many spend a lot of time chewing? What does that mean? You know, think. Spend a lot of time chewing things over, little creature. Yeah, I do. I spend a lot of time chewing things over. And then finally the oak says, well, look, and how about this? Does it take a lot longer than you know it ought to get out of your own way?
Anybody have that problem? You know, you want to get over it, but it stands over you for a short period of time, 30 years. And the little creature says, you know, you've kind of tagged it for me. All those things you asked me about, by God, they're true. And the mighty oak says, well, I think I've figured out the mystery here. Has anybody else figured out the mystery yet? Good. Mighty oak says, see, let me put this simply, but are you sure you want me to solve this mystery for you? The little creature says, yeah, of course I do. And the oak says, well, you're not a butterfly yet. You're still a caterpillar. You're not a butterfly yet. You're still a caterpillar. Do you know one of the most difficult things that any of us will do in our life, let alone during the time we're working together, is begin to recognize that if I am what I take myself to be, if I am what I imagine myself to be, then by the very fact that I have to refer to myself at all as anything proves that I am not that which I imagine. How many of you imagine that you have a head on your shoulders? We know we don't have to sit and imagine, is my head there? In most of our instances, it is there. It's a fact. I don't have to imagine about my hands. About my mouth. It's a fact. Then why do I have to think about myself at all to know myself? The answer is I'm still a caterpillar. And the caterpillar has butterfly dreams. As, by the way, the caterpillar is created to have. You and I, as men and women, creatures on this earth, beings, seeds that we talked about, We are here literally with something that lives inside of us that the world hasn't answered. Or we wouldn't be here talking about it. But there's also something that lives in us that is all the time saying, fly away. You're a butterfly now. Have you ever had a good day? Anybody? You know, on a good day, you can dispel advice to the Pope. You know everything. You're all seeing, all knowing. I am flying through the skies and I'm going to put it out here whether you like it or not, which I do anyway. The spiritual mumbo jumbo today, the new age nonsense of today, the ridiculous things that people are being pumped full of by which all they have to do is think themselves to be something and they are, could not be further from the truth and produces more psychopathy, not less. Why? Because it's one more thing for me to have to think about who I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to be like. And the problem is the idea of being kind and loving and true is a beautiful idea. But the nature that lives from thought can't know anything about what is true and kind and beautiful because it only approaches those truths through its imagination of those things. Not the thing itself, which doesn't need imagination to be expressed. Now, I better put this in early in the talk. Those of you who are in the front row, who want to sit in the row behind, I'm sure there'll be people that will switch with you because this is what I actually haven't even started. This is how it's going to go. I want more than anything else while I'm talking to you to convey to you not just the words and the ideas, but some of the energy of that truth itself so that you can find in yourself that which goes, yeah, that's right. Because you're not just agreeing with the words. This is not about words. If it was words, we could pick up a Bible or pick up a great book and read it, and we'd be done. This is about immersing ourselves deliberately into a mutually agreed atmosphere in which, by the very fact of that atmosphere, things are being stirred in us. How many of you have any idea at all that we only want to be stirred by those swizzle sticks that have the names on them that we like? See, life... Real life is a cosmic swizzle stick. You can quote me. A cosmic swizzle stick, and you and I are the individuals that are the recipients of and hold the content across the universe of what is being stirred. And when we can finally understand the relationship with that, then we no longer fear it. And see, caterpillars, back to our present state, caterpillars are afraid of everything. And well, they should be, because they can't run. Have you ever seen a caterpillar run? They trip. And they always are carrying something behind them, aren't they? And they're always chewing stuff over. The point was, the tree recognized that this thing was not the butterfly it dreamed itself to be. It was still a caterpillar. And that's what we have to start with. In fact, I hope this isn't too much for you. I tell you that as men and women, there is the eternal principle of the caterpillar and the butterfly. And it is that eternal principle of the caterpillar and the butterfly that is real life. Because at once the caterpillar and the butterfly in reality exist above the forms that we see. It's a principle. It's a divine principle. The light into the darkness and the darkness being transformed. That thing is constantly going on. You're sitting in it right while I'm talking to you. But when you think, and by the way, how many of you alternatingly have hated yourself for being such a stupid caterpillar? You know what I'm talking about. You big lunkhead, you. You know, what's wrong with you? And then what does that caterpillar do? It puts itself in a cocoon that it never comes out of, because then it's going to protect itself from everything that's harming it. When what's harming it is the fact that it hasn't lived up to discovering what it must go through so that it becomes the embodiment of this principle of a butterfly. All right, take another deep breath. We're ready for the next phase. There is no living in the now without learning to let go. Because what we are speaking about right now, the butterfly and the caterpillar, and being willing to see, look, light doesn't get dark. Light doesn't get dark. What does that mean? Have you ever thought to yourself that in your anger, you're right? Everyone does. I have a right to be angry like this. That negative state, and I'm not going to spend the time to do this, but if you want to, you can find out for yourself. There is no negative state that embodies a human being, that a human being incorporates, that doesn't destroy the being that's incorporating it, period. Not one negative state is good for you. Not one. None of it. None of it. As long as you and I look at it and let that negative state define us. Our task is to use these inherent dark states, these inherent negative energies, which in themselves have no problem. They're not bad in themselves. And to use them for what they're given to us for, which is part and part a caterpillar body. Imagine every time that something negative took place inside of you, that rather than you thinking you're the light because you can see, isn't it? Look, have you ever noticed that you're the light when you see how dark other people are? Yes or no? That's how I know I'm the light, because I can see this man, he's living darkness. And if he had anything to him, he'd know he was that way. Well, see, light doesn't judge. Light doesn't judge. So anything in me that calls itself the light, because I can see things around me that are dark and that I resist or hate or am angry about, that's not the light, man. That's the darkness calling itself the light. And by the way, and how great is that darkness that calls itself the light, for those of you who know its scripture at all. So we're talking about this process of going through what is illustrated beautifully in this world by this caterpillar and butterfly idea. This rebirth, because really what comes out of that cocoon is nothing in common with what went into it. It isn't a reconfigured caterpillar. That'd be ugly, wouldn't it? long lot of legs and then two wings. and its butt would always be dragging as it flew. You use your imagination. This change that has to take place is what we're speaking of when we talk about living in the now and letting go. Because they're really the same thing. Occasionally, for all of us, accidentally, we enter into this now. And I made some examples. Have you ever been skiing or skating or maybe doing yoga or playing golf or doing some kind of activity? And while you're doing it, suddenly you're in it. You're in something that your activity aligned you with, and you're in the flow of that moment. Everyone here knows something of that, don't we? You could even be in the flow of a conversation. Just there. And in that moment, you're aware of something kind of sustaining you. Because you know, you found you're in the groove. This is it. This is pretty good. Physically, we enter into the now because that flow is part of the now. Emotionally, we enter from time to time accidentally into the now. When we look out and maybe see that sun breaking through the clouds, or we catch the evening light as it shades trees differently, or maybe another example would be when a person is an artist or a songwriter and they hear a strain of music, or they even hear something, and for a split second, and this is an indication of it, everything kind of melts away, and you recognize that you are participating in something that is quite nourishing, quite good for you. And then intellectually, from time to time, we enter into the now when we have an insight, when an epiphany comes. We're walking along and suddenly it wasn't invited, or maybe we had been pondering it, but there's a difference between the caterpillar pondering something and the moment where the light breaks, and then you have that feeling of flying. You have a feeling of understanding that came to you because that moment, everything integrated. And we're going to use that word quite a bit when we're talking over the time, is this idea of integration. Because, as I said at the top, this now, the real now, not the intellectual one, not the imagined one, is a perfect integration of all the creative forces. A dynamic, mutual convergence of things. And it's always doing that. It's always doing that. That activity that we've had by accident at a certain point, if we've touched it at all or it's touched us, we want to begin to no longer have to have it accidentally. We want to be able to live like that. We want to know that kind of love. We want to know that kind of insight. We want to know what it means to be someone who doesn't hurt another human being, who's in the flow. And because of that, is in direct relationship with everything else that's in that flow. And by the way, when reality itself is your guide, your backbone, you tell me how you can go wrong, where the problem's going to be. Everything, as that convergence, uses everything for itself. So the key here is moving from this accidental, which I call a divine discontent, because the more these moments touch you where you see something that you didn't bring to yourself, but that you were visited by, the more you think to yourself, well, man, who wants to drink Ripple when you can have a fine Chardonnay? You understand what I'm saying? I don't want to sit and eat that. If there's a divine sustenance, I want that kind of nourishment because that's what gets me. So you want that. You want to move from an accidental relationship with this life to a deliberate one, which is what the work is about. And that's when we start recognizing that this idea of living now has to do with a relationship with the present moment. And we're going to differentiate the idea of living now with living then. Living then is not any fun. We've talked a little bit about it. Living then is the caterpillar life. Living then is remembering when, why, who. And by the way, important idea, living then is when you think about your future. Because you see, you can't think about a future without calling on your past. It's impossible. So most of what we call our future is just this nature, looking back at what didn't happening, thinking how it can make it better later, and then calling that the future, and then you get the great feeling out of the new picture, but the picture turns out to be as empty as every other picture that same nature produced. How many understand that idea? All right. So difference between living now and living then is the difference between living in this thought nature, which I've from time to time called the false self, versus living from what we'll call our true nature. And this true nature, this now nature, the God self, the Christ in us, the truth in us, it lives in a different world than we do. Or I should rephrase that. We live in a different world than it does. That nature, this truth, this now, we're in it right now. It is perfect connectivity. That's what we talked about, that flow. Have you ever been with somebody and for some reason, you know, you start having that conversation and you can see things about them you never saw before. You can feel things you never felt before because for whatever reason, there's a moment in which there's a completely different order of communication taking place between you and that person. These are rare moments in which for a flash, we are visited by and visitors of a world in which that kind of connectivity and compassion and natural love is the ground itself of that world. Have you ever heard the story about the fish who goes to the old fish and he says, I've got a problem. What's that little fish? I'm looking for water. I've heard there's water and I want to know where it is. And the big fish says, little fish, well, silly fish, you're in it. Stop it. No, you are. This is it. You're in the water. This can't be it. Silly fish, you're in it. But we don't know it because the nature we live from is apart from it. Even though it is the sea, if you will, it is the source of life that sustains the thought nature itself. So we live not from the wrong parts of ourselves. I'm not going to use that word. But we live from a part of ourselves that by its intensity and by its proclivity and by the power that it has presently due to the conditioned world and life, it prohibits us from being in relationship with the now, with being free, free to relate, free to express, free to participate in a world that is greater than the little world of thought. And what's really extraordinary, and I use the word and I use it quite a bit, is that this next world, that's what I'm calling it, this next world, it is more complete, it is more compassionate, it doesn't have stress and strain in it, it isn't, how about this, nothing in it is looking for itself. Did you ever fall in love with or become a friend with someone who was looking for himself? And then you were part of the path for a moment until that wasn't what they were looking for anymore, and then all of a sudden you're out of there. You don't count anymore. Why? Because you're just not part of it anymore. And then because you were dependent upon that person, you feel like your life is, you're dead. It's over. Finished. And in this other world that we're talking about, that we live in without knowing it, we can have relationships like that, and they actually become more fulfilling for us, as opposed to becoming sources of fear. So, this other world that we're speaking about is a completely different dynamic. It is a world in which, unseen, we live in. And we call it, in this work, the interior world. The interior world. And the reason we call it the interior world is because you're made in the image of God. You're a model of the universe. You're a model of the universe. Everything in you, without exception, is part of a great creative process that is perfecting itself moment to moment to moment, and yet that is already perfected all at the same time. And this interior life that we are supposed to have access to and live within is ostensibly kept from us because of this nature that we live from that wants to know what it is, what it's to do, how it's to do it at all costs all the time. And we miss out. How many of you have had the experience of realizing that some of the best times in your life were things that you absolutely couldn't have expected? Never in your wildest dreams thought that you would go and be someplace at a certain point and that that moment would be one of those impressions that you would never forget as long as you lived. See, that moment didn't exist independent of you, but you were separate from it up to that point. Buy something in you that's always looking. And of course, the reverse is true. Ever have high expectations and find yourself like really bummed that nothing turned out the way you wanted it to turn out? Which is nothing but stress and anger. And then what? And then the blame on the world outside of yourself for the way you feel. Instead of understanding that what you're perceiving in that moment is a direct reflection of the nature you're living from. So the inner determines the outer. If you learn anything the rest of your life, the inner determines the outer. What we are moment to moment is what determines our experience of the moment we're in. And when we understand that, the moments themselves become beautiful reflections, expressions of ourselves to ourselves. Here's a strong idea. You never meet anything in the moment other than what you have brought into it with you. Period. How many of you think you meet things in the moment that you didn't bring into it with you? You know, I go someplace and she's done this or he's done that. I didn't bring that in with me. You brought in the nature that swizzle stick caused to suffer, didn't you? Otherwise, you wouldn't be suffering. In other words, something is stirred in us by the conditions around us. Thinking to ourselves that who we are is nothing other than this feeling that we identify with that's been stirred makes us then want to blame and get away from everything that's caused that stirring. Not anymore. You're going to learn what it means to welcome everything that happens to you. You're going to learn, you want to write that down? You're going to learn to welcome everything that happens to you. Because I want to ask you a question. What kind of life is it that you go through where 50% of the time you don't want your life? Because that's it, isn't it? If you look at it, half the time or more, you're wishing you weren't where you were. You're wishing you weren't doing what you were doing. And you're trying to figure out how you can get someplace where everything's going to be great. So 50% of your life, at a minimum, is thrown away in resistance, not wanting it. We're going to learn about how to want everything. Because we're going to learn there's an inherent goodness in something greater than ourselves that lives within us, leading us to that understanding. Now, the last part of this talk. So take one more deep breath. Have you ever heard the expression that the truth is a pathless land? Anybody ever heard that expression? It's true. Which means that you can pretty much throw away everything that you think you're walking on as a path. Because if you can see it as a path, it's not the path. And the reason that it's not the path is because, did you ever do one of those when you were a kid or maybe later on in life? You remember there was like a set of, there was like a big block and it had a circle and a triangle and a square and it had a series of blocks and it, children play with them. And your task was to take the block and make it fit into the proper place in that block within a certain period of time. How many of you failed? Let me explain to you what I'm talking about when I'm talking about the now, real life. Imagine for a moment, because this is the way it is, that life is not a series of forms that you're supposed to fit into, but that rather it's a constantly changing dynamic being created and transformed moment to moment to moment, and that what was a triangle 1 second ago is becoming a square even as you're looking at it, and that that square is becoming a circle even as you think to yourself, ah, there's a square. And then further imagine that what you're holding in your hand, that which you know you try to put, have you ever tried to put a square peg in a round hole? What does that mean? You're with someone, you're trying to change them. You're looking at your life and you're not in the right place doing the right thing, so you're going to figure out how to put this block. You're going to make this thing. You got, this is how it's going to be. And you're going to shove that block in that thing no matter what. And you sit there and you bang and bang and bang. And by the way, who gets hurt when you bang on stuff? You do. So not only is these forms that we're trying to stick our blocks into changing, but so is the block that we're holding. Imagine for a minute, and you have to work at it a little bit. Here you pick up a block, and when you pick it up, it's a triangle. And you look down here, and here's this thing, and it looks like a triangle where you're putting it. And you go to put that block in the triangular form. But as you're moving towards it, you see that the thing is starting to shape shift, change, turning into a square. And next to it, what was round is now starting to take on a triangular form. And so because you're awake and aware of the continual dynamic that you are a part of, that you are a part of, no difference between you and the life that's changing. It's one thing. Imagine that as you're doing that, you're able to see that and you effortlessly move the block into the place it belongs. Even as both are changing. That's what learning to be present to yourself is about. That's what the path is. Because you see, we want the path to lead to a proven place. Yes or no? I want the path to lead to a proven place. And for us, it's different. Maybe I think the path is I'm going to become an enlightened man. The Christ is going to be, not I, but the Christ. I'm going to get all the money in the world that I want. Each person has different crazy ideas about what the path leads to. I'm telling you, the path doesn't lead to anything. Because it doesn't go anywhere. What's eternal doesn't go anywhere. It is. And our task is not to go someplace, it's to discover inside of ourselves a certain order of our own being that is not apart from that dynamic. And that's where letting go comes in. That's where the whole idea of little by little by little recognizing that it's possible for us, instead of trying to always confirm ourselves by life and going through that process where I'm always trying to figure out who I am, to begin to submit, and this is a big word, you know the word surrender, let go, release, to begin to surrender ourselves to the action of this light that lives inside of us, that not only shows us this changing dynamic that's stirring all the time, but by our relationship with that stirring through this understanding, how we are all a part of it. And it's good. It's good. This goodness, if you will, is what it means to the idea of let the journey be the destination. Let the journey be the destination. Then, you see, I'm not going anywhere. I've discovered a new being. And I've invited it into my life. I've become receptive to whatever degree I'm capable of. And this is the last thing I'm going to say because I have only 1 minute left. I want you to understand something if you understand nothing else. You cannot fail in your wish for God's life. You cannot fail in your wish for truth to come into your life. It's impossible. You can't fail at it. But there are parts of you that will rise up and tell you with every effort you make, look at you. Look at that. So one of the exercises we're going to do while we work together is anytime you hear anything in yourself or anyone else, but by the way, don't correct anybody. Stay out of other people's life. You want a big spiritual lesson? Leave people alone, will you? You'll be happier. They'll be happier. Anytime you hear something denigrating yourself about yourself, I don't want you to think of it as being the light because it casts you in darkness. I want you to see that something dark is talking to you, recognize it as such, and instead of letting it define you and defile you, you bring into that darkness, that voice, that thought, your awareness of its existence, and then you will watch it fade from view. Because it has no authority, none, over this nature that we're talking about when it comes to learning to let go and live in the now.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.